Good afternoon, everyone. And I'm glad you're all sharing and getting to know each other even more and visiting. But we want to interrupt that visit to talk to you about the Administrative Streamlining Program, which I'm sure you've all heard a lot about. It had a former name, the Initiative Coordination Office, but we changed that name to be a little more reflective of the work that we're doing across the university. So what formerly used to be ICO, or Initiative Coordination Office, will be the Administrative Streamlining Program Office that's located in the Division of Planning and Budget. So for the last 18 months or so, Cornell has been involved in an assessment of its administrative services. Many of you have participated through committees and other activities in analyzing with a group of consultants that came to campus to help us identify ways that we could streamline our services, become more efficient and a little more effective in service delivery. So the objectives of the streamlining program have been to renew our service delivery to you by adopting best practices and creating simpler and more responsive systems. Today we are going to look at one of those initiatives in greater detail and respond to questions around it. So we have the Vice President for Human Resources here to talk with you about spans and layers, which is one of eight initiatives that we're engaged in. There were also two academic emphases in this process that were identified in the provost area, dealing with centers and institutes and with the provost organization in general. Those recommendations and those savings are also a part of this administrative process and savings initiative. The initiative resulted in making recommendations on policies to change, on governance that needed to be changed, as well as administrative processes. So today we're going to begin that series, and we're going to talk to you about how we're tracking those changes, what some of the programs and plans are across those initiatives. But there are eight of them, and we plan other open forums and other ways to communicate to you around it. In fact, what we did was we built a website that you can access with your Net ID to give you updates on the administrative initiatives. So just to give you a brief overview of the initiatives that we're talking about, this is a project summary. And what you see here on this screen is the initiatives listed, the savings that we expect to achieve by fiscal year. You'll see that it goes from zero to $80 million. So we're expected to, at the end of this period, by 2015, to have at least achieved permanent savings at the institution of $78 to $85 million, understanding that that'll take some investments from us in order to achieve some of the initiatives and to improve the services along the way. The procurement initiative, as you see there, spans and layers, which we'll talk about today, facilities and other initiatives, have savings that would be generated across the institution for this entire period of time. The way that we expect to implement those savings, we have created a tracking mechanism so that the administrative sponsors and the administrative teams can identify the places where the savings are going to occur. The idea of these initiatives is that it will save you money in your administration of your activity, and we will be able to extract those resources in order to impact and effectively reduce the ongoing budget deficit that we have at the university. But like I said, not all the savings are going to create or activities will create dollar savings, but will create time savings and make us more efficient and allow us to use best practices. The open forums that we have scheduled to date, and you will be able to access these on our website. You'll see today's the first one. We also have opportunities next week on November 4th to look at facilities initiative. On the 5th, we'll be looking at the procurement initiative and the finance initiative. And on November 10th, we'll be talking about the IT initiative. So stay tuned and please plan to come and participate in those initiatives and forums as well. The Administrative Streamlining Program website, which I think you received in the mail and has been published in the Chronicle and other places on campus, is accessible with your Net ID. It provides an opportunity for you to pose questions to the administrative sponsors, teams, and our office, and we will respond to those questions directly. But as we receive several questions around the same subject, we will post the answers to those questions on the website under the frequently asked questions part of the website. So with that, I would introduce the administrative sponsor in human resources, Mary Opperman, to talk about that initiative, and after which we'll entertain questions. Thank you, Mary.
Good afternoon. For those of you who don't know her yet, Almira Mangum, our new VP for Budget and Planning. I'd also like to just take a moment and introduce my two academic partners on the two projects I'm going to talk very quickly about today, the Human Resources Initiative and Spans and Layers. For the Human Resources Initiative, Dean Harry Katz was my partner. He's right here. And for Spans and Layers, Dean Peter LePage. Peter. So let me go through this rather quickly. The Human Resources Initiative, and you see the project in front of you, had a number of aspects to it. And I'm going to run through these with you. Almost all of the project managers are here with us today. And so if you have questions about the sub-projects underneath here, I'm going to actually ask them to talk about them. The service assessment and feedback project is actually completed. We recommended and the steering group approved that we develop a service assessment tool for each of the areas in administration that operates a service, central service. And also that the leaders, the vice presidents, have a feedback tool that our primary peers review us on. And Chris Halliday and his colleagues developed a proposal, and that's been submitted to the president, who's reviewing it now. Probably the largest project that we're working on is an HRMS upgrade. For those of you who have been on the campus for a while, you know that 11 years ago, could it be that long? 11 years ago. I was much younger then, and my hair was a different color. We put in PeopleSoft HR payroll, and it is time for us to do something with that project, with that system. And we decided, consistent with the IT design proposals, to recommend that we move from PeopleSoft to a new system called Workday. And we are delighted that the leadership of the university has agreed. And so while there are many, many, many aspects of this project yet to be determined, we are moving forward with an HRMS upgrade towards a project, towards a system called Workday. The next project is another really exciting opportunity for us called an onboarding center. That's a little bit of jargon. I apologize for that. But simply put, this is an idea of welcoming all of our newest hires into the university in a single place and with a single experience. And so we got a lot of positive feedback from our managers and from our leadership about this idea. We believe not only will it create a much better experience for those who come to the campus new, but also will be a more efficient opportunity and take work out of the departments where we know that we've really burdened the managers. And so Jeff Herman will be leading that charge. Jeff will also be managing our work around recruitment and staffing redesign. We're taking a look at where we can have a more common recruitment and staffing experience. Not every job will be recruited for in a similar or common way, but we do think some of our jobs would be advantaged if we had a more common approach to recruitment. And we're working with our campus partners right now to determine what those would be. We believe that it will enhance our opportunity for diversity in those jobs, and Jeff is working on that right now. Julie Addy has, for quite some time, been leading the consolidation of our administrative HR area, and actually I believe this will be completed before June of 2011. We have most of the pieces in place already, and we are well on our way to a singular, more efficient design of HR for central administration. And finally, Betsy Schreier is leading our work in the area of service agreements for HR, so that our partners know and agree to what it is we will be delivering. But also, she is leading all service agreement development with our partners in the central administration operations. And so there'll be a common understanding of outcomes with our campus partners, so that when we say we're going to do something, we have a common understanding of what that outcome will be. And Betsy's well on her way to meeting her May deadline. And so that's the Human Resource Initiative, and that's where we're moving in that direction. Moving quickly to the Spans and Layers project. So Spans and Layers. Let me go forward about the two aspects of Spans and Layers that are now projects. When Bain came in and we had a pretty significant financial challenge in front of us, they gave us a bunch of tools to consider, and one of them was a methodology called Spans and Layers. And very simply put, what Spans and Layers is a way to look at your organizational structure. How many layers are there between management layers between the top of the organization, or the president, and the bottom of the organization? And how many people does each of those management layers have reporting to it? And there is an efficiency to that, the number of layers and the number of people reporting to each of those managers. And Bain proposed to us that in some places in the university, there would be some advantage to considering looking at the university for efficiencies by shrinking the number of layers and expanding the number of people reporting to each manager. This is one tool of a number of tools for increasing efficiency. And so what we did was using Bain experts, and with Peter and I as executive overseers, we asked Kathy Dove, who's an associate dean in engineering, to work with Bain and work with each dean and vice president to determine where in their organizations they thought this particular tool might be helpful. We did not use it everywhere because it does not work everywhere. And then we asked each leader to look at their organizations and tell us, with the budget reality we had in place, where would this tool be helpful to them? And they told us that. They designed their organizations using this tool in some cases, and not in every case, as one of the tools in the quiver for redesign. And so human resources, along with budget, has as one of its ongoing responsibilities to taking back those organizational designs to track to the designs that we got back from the leaders. And so Kim Babuka in our office will be partnering with budget to track where Spans and Layers was used and the organizations were changed to the designs that we received back from the leadership. So that's the first part of the Spans and Layers responsibility. The second part, though, and it's under the very broad rubric of Spans and Layers, but it's really much, much more, is the most important thing I think we have to do on the campus. And that's to really rethink work. Because the reality is that there are many, many fewer of us on this campus. And you've heard me say this before, we never really did stupid or unnecessary work. We were always doing really important work with our hearts and our souls. And so to take out as many people as we've taken out of the campus, people here are still as loyal, They are still trying to get everything done, and we are really struggling to figure out how to realign the work with the available resources. And so Kathy Berkren is leading the effort to try to redesign work to the available resources, and that is no small feat. We have a target date of 12/31. That is not a target date. It will not stop at 12/31. This is the work that will ultimately put the organization back on a track where people are in balance, both with the work that they can accomplish and in a balance with their work lives, balance that they need to be. And so Kathy and her colleagues have their hands full. You have your hands full. And this is the realignment that we are all struggling with right now. And so those are the two broad initiatives. And I want to leave the majority of time for questions and answers, because that's really why we're here. That's the open part of the open forum. So. Kathy, can I turn that over to you?
Thank you. Thanks, Yamin. So what it is it's what we've been doing for the last year. We've been developing tools to help people really think about what is the work, what's the work that we must do, that we should do, that we can stop doing as we have fewer resources. And it is actually really critical that we're able to do this, and how do we align that to the mission that the university wants us to do? So what we want to do is we want to put out we're trying to really simplify it as much as we can to give leaders instruction in how they can help them manage their organizations with the work that they have. So looking at the work, what does that work look like? How can you simplify it? How can you align roles to the work? As Mary said, what can we not do anymore? We can't keep trying to do it all. So what we're doing is we're going to be meeting with the vice presidents and the college officers and the human resource generalists in those areas, and we're going to be sharing with them the model that we have, and then from there we're going to be asking them to work with us to help us figure out what makes sense for their unit, who in their unit would like to work with us to try to apply some of the tools. We're also trying to make the tools simple enough so that anybody can pick them up and use them right in their unit. So really, that's our goal, is to create tools that you can go online, look at, and use. And there's already some out there. We're just trying to refine them more. Does that answer it?
We'll just keep talking if you don't.
Kathy, when will we be able to start on that process of redesigning the work? We've recently eliminated four positions that had people in them, and we need to figure out how to redesign that work, and we haven't had a chance to do that until now.
So first of all, it depends on if you want to start yourself, and you're more than willing to do that. And also, you can contact me, you can contact Chris Halliday. We're really taking the lead on working with groups. Pam Strauser is taking the lead also on working with some of the academic groups. So what I share with people is really, if we can sit down for 2 to 3 hours and help you figure out what is your core work, whoever you want to bring in the room with you, what is your core work? By the end of that 3 hours, we can have a really good plan to help you start to move forward, to figure out what it is that, how you want to apply any remaining tools to help you refine that. So you can start right now. And we also partner with Ann and Kim and Sherry Constantino in aligning positions to that. So I think part of the beauty in this whole thing is we have been partnering with budget and planning, and compensation and organizational effectiveness have all been partnering together, because we realize that for the campus to really be able to move forward together, it helps if all of those that you're trying to partner with are all on the same page. So you could start tomorrow, and as honestly, as soon as you can get on somebody's calendar, if you want help, if you want to just start on your own with a short conversation, you could start now.
Yeah, in the back.
Will redesign. DFA decided we're not going to print statements anymore. But the policy didn't change. We still have to do that work. So it seems like he gets turfed off at the department level.
Yeah.
How will we be protected from that?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Actually, one of the things that we're working on in the with the Workday program is, so that's the HRMS system, is before we do anything with a system, we're starting from scratch with actually a campus leader, not a central leader, looking at all of our policies and procedures from a campus standpoint, not from a central standpoint. Because one of the things that with all of our very best intentions, sometimes we don't take a look at all of the streams of work. And so I think the best suggestion I can give you, when you feel something come towards you that doesn't feel, that feels like it's going to add work to your plate, is to reflect it immediately back to where you think it came from. Because the intention is never to add work. It may be the unintended consequence, but it's never the intention. And my general reflection back to the campus is that this has been unprecedented in my work lifetime. I've never lived through anything like I've just been through. I don't want to speak for anybody else. But what I can say is that we have an opportunity as a community to get through it together if we remember some of our framing, which is that we are a community. And when we sort of remember that, one of the things that makes us special is that for a lot of us, we've been here a long time, and somewhere in that group we know someone. And I forget sometimes that we're going so fast that I do forget that they're doing the same thing I'm doing, which is going too fast sometimes. So if something comes to you and it's just not going to work, my general recommendation is feed it back. Make sure someone knows, because it could be very unintentional that it got to you that way. Don't let it integrate into a bad procedure or policy, because that's when it gets hard to change. So if at all possible, when you're starting to hear something or something comes to you, as quickly as you can, either get it up to someone who can get it fed back or get it to someone you know. Let's not make mistakes that someone after us goes, what were they thinking? That's my learning point. And I don't mean this in any way, but I never thought I'd do another HRMS, but I learned so much the last time that the stubborn part of me is going to do it different this time.
Can you talk a little bit more about the tracking project and what your goals are at the end, what the purpose of the actual tracking is?
Sure, great question, thank you. So when we went out and we talked to the leaders, we said to them then, and so let me just go back and remind all of you, when we did the incentive program, we took out a lot of jobs. And then we held a lot of jobs open, and you all are feeling that right now. Yeah, look at you all looking at me with daggers in your eyes. We've held a lot of jobs open, and you're feeling that right now. We did that, for better or worse, to try to tamp down. We still had a number of layoffs, but many fewer than we originally feared. That level of position reduction, though, allowed us to use those openings to redesign the work. Now that, and in some cases, we also had layoffs. So those redesigns, though, are what we're now relying on for the reduction in that budget deficit. And so it is essential that we not backslide on the progress that we have made. So the tracking is our way of making sure that we keep what we said we were going to do. That's what the tracking does. And it's not, by the way, absolute position-to-position tracking. I mean, things are going to change. It's general tracking. We don't micromanage at this level because, something will shift or change. But it's general tracking. I don't know, nor should I know, what a college officer or an HR director in a, college or unit knows. As long as it stays framed at the general level we've agreed to of spans and layers, that's all that matters from a budgetary and organizational standpoint.
Mary, I have a question, two questions. What would you say to folks who currently supervise one or two or three or four people who are now saying, oh no, what do they need to think? And second of all, as people move up in the corporation, a lot of the moving up piece has to do with increasing your supervising of people. And so with a number of less supervisors, how can people now expect to grow at Cornell?
Those are two great questions. First of all, it may make sense to supervise one or two or three people because not every job that has that was looked at or should have been looked at. So remember the beginning that not every position or every area made sense to be looked at from a spans and layers standpoint. Some jobs, that's the way they should be. And so that doesn't mean that every job that has a small span is a problem. But your second question is really salient, and I want to make sure I stay on that. There are lots of ways to grow, and we're learning a really lot from our counterparts outside of higher ed about the value of work. And one thing that we know one way to grow is up the management ranks. But we also know that that's not the only way to grow. And that's the only way that we gave you to grow, but it's not the only way to grow. That in fact, increasingly, there's lots of other ways to grow that are actually in the very same trajectory from a pay and banding standpoint. And we need to change the way we've thought about that at Cornell. And Ann Snell is actually leading our thinking about how we need to do that. And so I think we have a long way to go in terms of how we think about that. But it's certainly still a very, laudable and important practice to have a management stream, but it's not the only one anymore. That way of thinking about job growth in the non-academic area is only one way to think about job growth.
Another thing that we've been doing, and Maria, where are you? I saw you come in. Maria Wolf is working on this now, working with groups and people, because Ann has the development tracking that she's working on in terms of growing and developing people. But really the biggest thing that we've learned is that you and I, both of us, all have to give up a little something in order to grow one another. Does that make sense? So let's say I have someone in my unit who really wants to learn about finance, right? I'm just picking something out of the air. And maybe there's somebody in finance who wants to learn something about another area. How do we work together to help one another make some rotations, not making it complicated, but going where people's interests are? And that's why the individual development plan and the performance management packet is so important. If supervisors understand where people in their units want to grow and develop, how can we make that happen with people? And Maria is really leading that effort to try to work with people to say, I have someone who wants grown in this area, and I have someone who wants grown in this area. How do we do some of those transitions without it letting it get confusing, which is where Maria comes in, because she can help you track some of those and make sure that somebody's always growing and that we're all growing and developing within our organization. Because if I go and grow and develop, let's say in compensation, right, then somebody may have to take on my role for a while. So somebody in my unit is going to grow and develop. So it's kind of this process that just kind of weaves in and out. It's not necessarily a clear path. It may not look like a clear path, but it really does work.
Thank you, Kathy. There's one in the back, too.
As we go through reorganization, there always will be people who are sort of feeling like they're lost in the process. And so I guess I'm wondering what kinds of safety nets are there either being thought about or in place to protect those people who are feeling like this is not a humane process. I'm feeling not very good about it.
So there's a number of safety nets at the university. The best place, if you are comfortable with it, is in your organization with your supervisor or their supervisor. Not everyone immediately feels comfortable doing that, but I wanna say, look broadly before you reject it, because very often the first instinct is to just say, well, no, I don't want to, but the best solutions are often inside of your organization. And so very, very often, sometimes it takes going to talk to somebody before you're comfortable going back, and your HR person is a good place to go. FSAP is a good place to go. The ombudsman is a good place to go. But I do want to try to convince you to think through your organizational construct before you reject it. It may not be your immediate supervisor. It may be above your immediate supervisor, maybe your HR person or your college officer, I don't know. But I do know that in most cases on this campus, somewhere in that organization is someone not only who will listen, but who has the ability to be helpful and supportive in a confidential way. As I said, if not, there are confidential resources that will just listen.
Can't tell if I can hear it. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on what Kathy was saying and just ask, when do you think there might be more information available to us about how some of those shifts are going to be happening in terms of helping people to do some of that shifting? Because what I'm thinking is that right now that there isn't a whole lot out there. And I'm somebody who isn't interested in moving up the ladder, but gaining expertise and kind of moving across the board. And how do you get rewarded for that and continue to find opportunities to stay within the organization mm-hmm. and to grow? And I'm sure I'm not alone in that.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Hi.
Ann, just say your name.
Yes, I'm Ann Snell, Compensation Office. And I'm going to sound a little bit like Pollyanna from my old cheerleading days, but I really feel that we're not going to have change overnight. Sure, we wish it was all done. There's going to be discomfort. There's going to be resistance to change. You're going to feel like the Cornell or the office of the department that you knew isn't what was. But I really feel like we're in the midst of some really empowering change. We've got so much happening. We've got a campus business process review that Mary referred to, the reviewing processes, procedures, policies, looking for redundancies, eliminating those redundancies, trying to make folks more efficient. We're reviewing all of that. We're looking at new systems, as Mary said, in HRMS, and also, as many of you are aware, in Qali, in the financial systems. We're looking at new ways of delivering IT services and support. So if you think about what's going to happen with all of that, we're most likely coming up, and a flattening of the organization. We've got an opportunity, and I think really no choice left but to increase each employee's decision rights, increase their accountability. That's going to, as you pointed out, increase role complexity and individual contribution. I think what that will do is empower workers to trust themselves, not just only do the work, but be empowered to make decisions about what comes next or recommendations with much more weight than they've been able to make in the past. And it's going to increase individual contributors' visibility to all parts of the organization and across all leadership levels. So I know that sounds like pie in the sky, like really positive, but I think if you begin to think about all the changes that we're talking about, and as Mary said, we're kind of breathless, we're at a very fast pace from what we can tell in many of our Ivy Plus peer groups, and we have a variety of Ivy Plus peer groups, no one has gone through this extent of change. We're leading the pack. We've got a tremendous opportunity to change how work gets done, to change the nature of what it means to be a contributing staff member in an organization as complex as Cornell. We're going to have challenges in terms of reward and recognition. We're going to try to streamline these bands. I'm jumping out of the box here, but the research that we've done, the benchmarking that we've done begin to indicate that we don't any longer need 9 band levels. It won't mesh with the spans and layers well. We need to be able to think outside these boxes we've been in for 15 years. So a lot of change to come, and I think part of the staff work redesign methodology is going to require managers and leaders to think about how to effectively allocate their resources.
So just
thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Just to say a little bit about where we know we are today, when you do see positions, and positions are getting posted, I do want to encourage you to look into them if you're interested and talk to your supervisors. I know I keep saying that, and I know, and I can see some of you rolling your eyes. So, about the opening, and about why you're interested in them, and about what they think is going to be happening in your current organization, and then go ahead and look at the ones that are posted. But I know that it has not been in the framework in some places. In some, it definitely has. To talk about necessarily where the organization is going, but it is a good time to do that if you don't have that in your general, experience. This is a good time to try to have those conversations. Where do you see our department or unit heading? Because I think managers are open to having those conversations now. And you might find that there's some interesting things going on. If not, there actually are some really interesting positions being posted now. And I think we're finding that people are a little bit reluctant to apply for them. And when they're going up, they've been really thought through before they get put up. So they're good jobs. Yeah.
Mary, what do you feel are some of the pros and cons to a deep management hierarchy? And how do you feel, what are some of the forces that have produced that kind of depth at Cornell and various places?
You mean the large number of layers?
Yes.
So I think the biggest advantage to a lot of layers is that there's not a lot of risk. There's a lot of people to look at everything before it gets done. And so when you have the time and resource luxury of layers, there tends to be less mistakes. That's just my view. The downside is obvious. It takes longer to get things done. It's, I think, less empowering for people under the layers, kind of like a real heavy blanket can sometimes. And it's a lot harder to get information up and down a lot of layers. And I can tell you that as someone who feels disconnected sometimes and doesn't like that feeling, it's frustrating to think you know and realize you just have absolutely no idea what's actually going on. And so I think that there's some advantages where it makes sense to leaner organizations. It's a lot harder to make those changes, though, than you would think. And there's a lot of valuable people in those. You're not talking about widgets or blocks. Those are human beings with a lot of skills inside those layers. They're not layers of frosting. They're people. And so you can't, you have to be thoughtful about what you do to make those changes. And so in general, it's easier to talk about these things than it is to do them. But I think in the long run, that was part of the reason why we approached it when we had openings. Make the changes when there's openings and flexibility, because it's when you can do it then, you do it less painfully.
Mary, who's working with the faculty? At the department level, there is an unbending expectation of staff performance from the faculty on a bunch of people who are working really hard and the sand is shifting beneath their feet.
This, of course, should be the deans who are working on it, and department chairs, and departments, the people working in the departments should be talking to their chairs, and the chairs are really the first, the prime person, because they're the person who's in a position to make sure that the demands on the staff are reasonable and that the staff is reasonably sized for the job that needs to be done. And so there's a lot of discussion back and forth between departments and deans at a time like this about what are appropriate staffing levels, but some of the discussion has to also be about departments requiring less stuff to be done, faculty requiring less stuff to be done by staff. The trade-off, of course, is for faculty is being able to have a lot of faculty and maintain as much as possible the size of the sort of educational effort and the research effort, and that's worth a lot to faculty, but people have to realize that those things are connected with each other, and that's a discussion we're having all the time in all of our colleges, I assume. Certainly we're having it in Arts and Sciences with chairs, with department managers, and with faculty and with staff.
I'll just pick up on the last point Peter was making, and that is this organization, like most organizations, when it faces financial emergencies, makes a lot of changes. You know, we get whacked and then we reorganize the organization. And the challenge is now when the pressure has lessened somewhat and we have more time to think through more deliberately than we could at the crisis moment about our structure. That's the point of the work redesign issue that Kathy's doing, is that we need to both reassess what we did during the crisis moment, but also to take advantage of the time we now have to think very deliberately about the nature of the work and how it can be done. And I think our challenge is to have those discussions more regularly, more continuously, and not just wait for the next moment when we get whacked, but to be in a better position on a more continuous basis. And it's a challenge for all of us. And Peter's right, the first avenue on the academic hierarchy is to talk to the chairs, then the associate deans and all, but it's also to incorporate the tools that Mary's office is trying to create. So we look very deliberately and patiently now that the emergency crisis is over, but there's still lots of changes occurring. It's not just a question of, oh, did we make the right decision given the conditions that existed 2 years ago, but our organization is continuing to evolve. There's entrepreneurial activity and other changes, and I think we need to incorporate kind of more continuous reassessment, and that, I think, is part of what we're trying to introduce.
In the back.
Set a goal financially or staff number-wise that they are trying to get to? Has a top layer of the university's administration set goals either financially or staff number-wise that they are trying to reach?
Yes, it has. In fact, each one of the initiatives has a financial target associated with it. The advantage, I guess, of spans and layers right now is that we have saved over 90% of the spans and layers target, and it was part of the budget that we administered starting on July 1st. So I would say about $14 million of a $17 million target has already been taken from the budgets. What we did in that process, based upon what you had identified across the university, was most of the positions that were identified, I think maybe a little less than 200, only 44 of them were filled positions. So the university did take advantage of the vacancies that Mary is talking about in administering its spans and layers targets this past year. Each of the initiatives, if you look on the website, you'll see that each of the initiatives has a target, and it has a target by fiscal year. The colors that were displayed, I think, in this earlier chart, if you look across each initiative, you'll see what that is on the scale that runs to $80 million by fiscal year. So those are our targets. I couldn't hear you.
You said, what about the people?
There is no people piece. It's each one of the areas when the analysis was done was specific to each organization in terms of its size and its spans and its layers. There's somebody else.
In going through all the processes and trying to hit targets and streamlining and spans and layers, after all that is done and the ideas are done for what, like the remaining positions and if we've had layoffs, is there a plan in place to review remaining, all the other positions and either reclassify or to go back and look at the compensation for the people remaining that have taken on oftentimes more job duties and such to review that as well?
Thank you for asking the question because I think it's on a lot of people's minds. You know, they're working a lot harder, and we haven't had a really robust SIP. We didn't have any 1 year, and then we had essentially an across the board SIP. And so people are saying, I'm working really hard and doing a lot more. We do need to take a look at our jobs and the job redesign. That's Anne was referring exactly to that. We need to do that in concert with the financial circumstances. And so the answer is yes. We do intend to take a look at the impact of the changes on the job design. I'd need to be honest, though, and say that how we get to the financial value of that will be in concert with a budget reality. So, we will balance those. You will hear us talk about balancing our realities for a long time to come. But the primary answer is yes. Our intention is to look at job designs going forward. Absolutely. Jobs have changed. They will continue to change. That is an effect of flattening the organization, and we need to understand that, understand the impact on jobs that Anne was talking about. That we believe that's a very good news story, empowering people to make decisions in jobs where they may not have before, and then understand the impact of that long run. Yeah.
Is there a target date for a new classification system for employees?
I do not want you to walk away thinking we're going to have a new classification system. The banding structure is a broad banding structure is a solid structure. There will be changes, I think, to the job designs within those bands. That's what we need to do. The jobs will change within the bands, and the job families will have to change within the bands. I think that's the walk away. That's the most important thing we have to do. Because when you could tell me that, you could have told me that before you walked in the door. The jobs are different. When you have fewer layers and broader spans, we change the jobs. And we heard from all of the people that did the work inside of IT and facilities that the job families had really gotten stale. So that's what we're going to focus on. Absolutely.
So let's thank Mary and her team for coming and sharing with this information with you today. I think you all know that this is one of the toughest initiatives that we have that was identified by the group to achieve the savings, not just because of the timing, but because it's personal to each of us and in our different work environments. So we do thank you for cooperating and thank the university for cooperating with us in achieving these savings. We will also have similar presentations at the next set of open forums, and we certainly invite you to come attend and share. I would ask that you look over the descriptions of some of the initiatives coming forward. Some of them may not be as intuitive as spans and layers or organizational structure and changes, so that you can ask questions and engage the other presenters as well. Thank you again for coming.